Chapter 4. Roxy plays a shrewd trick. Whoever has lived long enough to find out what life is, knows how deep a debt of gratitude we owe to Adam, the first great benefactor of our race. He brought death into the world. Pudd'nhead Wilson's calendar. Percy Driscoll slept well the night he saved his house minions from going down the river, but no wink of sleep visited Roxy's eyes. A profound terror had taken possession of her. Her child could grow up and be sold down the river. The thought crazed her with horror. If she dozed and lost herself for a moment, the next moment she was on her feet flying to her child's cradle to see if it was still there. Then she would gather it to her heart and pour out her love upon it in a frenzy of kisses, moaning, crying, and saying, "Deshant, oh, Deshant! Apostrophe, apostrophe, yo po mammy will kill you first." Once, when she was tucking him back in its cradle again, the other child nestled in its sleep and attracted her attention. She went and stood over it a long time communing with herself. "What has my po baby done? Daddy couldn't have yo luck. He ain't done nothing. God was good to you. Why weren't he good to him? They can't sell you down the river. I hates yo pappy. He ain't got no heart for niggers. He ain't, anyways. I hates him, and I could kill him." She paused a while, thinking. Then she burst into wild sobbings again, and turned away, saying, "Oh, I got to kill my chili. They ain't no other way. Killing him wouldn't save the chili from going down the river. Oh, I got to do it. Yo po mammy's got to kill you to save you, honey." She gathered her baby to her bosom now, and began to smother it with caresses. "Ammy's got to kill you. How can I do it? But yo mammy ain't gwine to desert you. No, no, da, don't cry. She gwine with you. She gwine to kill herself too. Come along, honey. Come along with mammy. We gwine to jump in the river. Then troubles, oh, this world is all over. Day, don't sell po niggers down the river over yonder." She stared toward the door, crooning to the child and hushing it. Midway she stopped, suddenly. As he had caught sight of her new Sunday gown, a cheap curtain calico thing, a conflagration of gaudy colors and fantastic figures. She surveyed it wistfully, longingly. "Ain't ever wore it yet," she said, "and it's just lovely." Then she nodded her head in response to a pleasant idea, and added, "No, I ain't gwine to be fished out, with everybody looking at me, and this Miss Abel Olay Lindsay Woolsey." She put down the child, and made the change. She looked in the glass, and was astonished at her beauty. She resolved to make her death toilet perfect. She took off her handkerchief turban, and dressed her glossy wealth of hair like white folks. She added some odds and ends of rather lurid ribbon, and a spray of atrocious artificial flowers. Finally she threw over her shoulders a fluffy thing called a loudon that day, which was of a blazing red complexion. Then she was ready for the tomb. She gathered up her baby once more, but when her eye fell upon its miserably short little gray toe linen shirt, and noted the contrast between its pauper shabbiness and her own volcanic eruption of infernal splendors, her mother heart was touched, and she was ashamed. "No, darling mammy ain't gwine to treat you so. The angels is gwine to mire you just as much as dey does yo mammy. Ain't gwine to have em puttin' dey hands up fo dey eyes and sayin' to David and Goliath and dem other prophets, that chili is dresses, to indelicate fo dis place." Apostrophe, by this time as he had stripped off the shirt. Now she clothed the naked little creature in one of Thomas Backquote A. Becket's snowy, long baby gowns, with its bright blue bows and dainty flummery of ruffles. "Da, now you's fixed." She propped the child in a chair, and stood off to inspect it. Straightway her eyes begun to widen with astonishment and admiration, and she clapped her hands and cried out, "Why, it do beat all. I never knowed you was so lovely. Marse Tommy ain't a bit puttier, not a single bit." She stepped over and glanced at the other infant. Apostrophe, she flung a glance back at her own, then one more at the heir of the house. Now a strange light dawned in her eyes, and in a moment she was lost in thought. She seemed in a trance. When she came out of it, she muttered, When I was a washing them in the tub, yesterday, he own pappy asked me which of them was hissin. She began to move around like one in a dream. She undressed Thomas Backwell A. Beckett, stripping him of everything, and put the tow linen shirt on him. She put his coral necklace on her own child's neck. Then she placed the children side by side, and after earnest inspection she muttered, "Now who would believe Claus could do the like o' that? Dog my cats, if it ain't all I can do to tell t'other from which, let alone his pappy." She put her cub in Tommy's elegant cradle and said, "Use young Marse Tom from dis out, and I got to practice, and get used to remembering to call you dat, honey, or I's gwine to make a mistake sometime and get us both into trouble. Da, now you lay still and don't fret no mo', Marse Tom." "Oh, thank the Lord in heaven, you saved, you saved. Dey ain't no man can ever sell mammy's po' little honey down the river now." She put the air of the house in her own child's unpainted pine cradle, and said, contemplating its slumbering form uneasily, "I sorry for you, honey, I sorry, God knows I is, but what can I do, what could I do? Yo pappy would sell him to somebody, sometime, and then he'd go down the river, sho, and I couldn't stand it." She flung herself on her bed, and began to think and toss. Toss and think. By and by she sat suddenly upright, for a comforting thought had flown through her worried mind, "'T'ain't no sin, white folks has done it. It ain't no sin, glory to goodness it ain't no sin. They's done it, yes, and they was the biggest quality in the whole bilin', two kings." She began to muse. She was trying to gather out of her memory the dim particulars of some tale as he had heard some time or other. At last she said, "Now I's got it, now I remember. It was that ole nigger preacher that told it, the time he come over here from Illinois and preached in the nigger church. He said they ain't nobody can save his own self, can't do it by faith, can't do it by works, can't do it no way at all. Free grace is the only way, and that don't come from nobody but Jesus the Lord. And he can give it to anybody he please, saint or sinner he don't care. He do jesus as he's a minister. He select out anybody that suit him, and put another one in his place, and make the first one happy forever and leave the other one to burn with Satan. The preacher said it was just like they done in England one time, long time ago. The queen she left her baby laying around one day, and went out calling, and one o' the niggers round about the place that was Mose White, she come in and see the chili laying around, and tuck and put her own chili's clothes on the queen's chili, and put the queen's chili's claws on her own chili, and then left her own chili laying around, and tuck and toted the queen's chili home to the nigger quarter, and nobody ever found it out, and her chili was the king bimaby, and sold the queen's chili down the river one time, when they had to settle up the estate. Da, now the preacher, said it his own self, and it ain't no sin, cause white folks done it. They done it, yes, they done it, and not on just as common white folks neither, but the biggest quality they is in the whole bilin'. Oh, I so glad I remember about that." She got lighthearted and happy, and went to the cradles, and spent what was left of the night practicing. She would give her own child a light pat and say humbly, "Lay still, Marse Tom," then give the real Tom a pat, and say with severity, "Lay still, Chambers. Does you want me to take some up to you?" As she progressed with her practice, she was surprised to see how steadily and surely the awe which had kept her tongue reverent and her manner humble toward her young master was transferring itself to her speech and manner toward the usurper, and how similarly handy she was becoming in transferring her motherly curtness of speech and peremptoriness of manner to the unlucky heir of the ancient house of Driscoll. She took occasional rests from practicing, and absorbed herself in calculating her chances. "They'll sell these niggers today fo' stealing the money, then they'll buy some mo' that don't know the chillin', so that's all right. When I takes the chillin' out to get the air, the minute I's round the corner I's gwine to gom they mouths all round with jam, then they can't nobody notice they's changed. Yes, I gwine ter do that till I safe, if it's a year. They ain't but one man that I's afeard of, and that's that Puddin'head Wilson. They calls him a Puddin'head, and says he's a fool. My land, that man ain't no more fool than I is. He's the smartest man in this town, less it's Jetch Driscoll or maybe Pem Howard. Blame that man, he worries me with them ornery glasses o' his'n. I believe he's a witch. But Nemen, I's gwine to happen around a one o' these days and let on that I reckon he wants to print a chillin's fingers agin. And if he don't notice days changed, I bound they ain't nobody gwine to notice it, and then I safe, show. But I reckon I'll tote along a horseshoe to keep off the witch work. The new Negroes gave Roxy no trouble, of course. The master gave her none, for one of his speculations was in jeopardy, and his mind was so occupied that he hardly saw the children when he looked at them, and all Roxy had to do was to get them both into a gale of laughter when he came about. Then their faces were mainly cavities exposing gums, and he was gone again before the spasm passed, and the little creatures resumed a human aspect. Within a few days the fate of the speculation became so dubious that Mr. Percy went away with his brother, the judge, to see what could be done with it. It was a land speculation as usual, and it had gotten complicated with a lawsuit. The men were gone 7 weeks. Before they got back, Roxy had paid her visit to Wilson, and was satisfied. Wilson took the fingerprints, labeled them with the names, and with the date October the 1st put them carefully away, and continued his chat with Roxy, who seemed very anxious that he should admire the great advance in flesh and beauty which the babes had made, since he took their fingerprints a month before. He complimented their improvement to her contentment, and as they were without any disguise of jam or other stain, she trembled all the while, and was miserably frightened lest at any moment he, but he didn't. He discovered nothing, and she went home jubilant, and dropped all concern about the matter permanently out of her mind. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.